Good afternoon, good morning, good day, depending on where you're listening from. Welcome to Profit and Beauty. Now, this show was created for salon owners who have decided to start running their salons like a business rather than a hustle. The focus of the show is to help salon owners understand the numbers behind their business so that they can grow and make extraordinary profits. Without this knowledge, it's really hard, if not impossible, for your salon to reach its true potential. My name is Desiree Anderson, and I have 19 years experience as a hairstylist and salon owner. I currently work as a certified public accountant, working mainly with salon owners and hairstylists. My background as a former stylist and salon owner gives me a much better understanding of what our industry professionals need and desire. So if you are a hairstylist or salon owner interested in running your salon like a business, then this show is for you. On the other hand, if you are a hairstylist or salon owner not interested in running your salon like a business, this show may or may not be for you. I just hope you keep listening, and maybe something you hear in one of the episodes will make you decide to turn your craft from a hustle into a business that you can scale and grow. So sit back and enjoy this week's episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to my podcast, Profit and Beauty. So today's subject is a subject that I think is very important, not just for the hair salon industry, but also for any type of business. If you are a business, whether you're an individual or whether you are a large corporation, or no matter the size of your business, I think that it's very important that you, the business owner, understand business financial literacy. So in this particular case, of course, I'm speaking to you, the beauty industry. So I'm going to be talking today about business financial literacy and why it's important. So one thing that we need to understand is that every decision that you make has a financial consequence. So whether it be picking a particular entity type, whether it be picking a software for your business, or just anything that you decide for your business, there is always a financial consequence to that decision. So today I'm going to be talking about the six components of business financial literacy. Now, these particular components were something that I made up on my own. So it's not a hard and fast rule. It's just something that I came up with based upon the types of issues that I find my customers or my clients have. So working in the salon industry, and even myself as being a former salon owner, there were certain things that I sort of struggled with, and not even struggled with, things that I didn't know anything about. And because of that, my business didn't necessarily grow at the pace that I would have liked. So basically, I found myself, once I got to a certain position or a certain financial status, I stayed there. And I really wasn't able to grow any further. And now that I'm an accountant, looking at things from the outside looking in, I'm starting to realize that the reason why that happened. So the six components of business financial literacy that I've decided to talk about, as I said, is based on my personal experience. So we'll be talking about, I'm just going to briefly discuss each component, because in further podcasts, I'm going to pick a component and I'm going to do a more of a deep dive. So I'll be talking about picking the right business structure, setting up your accounting system. Also, we'll be discussing cash flow management. What is it? Why is it important? And what's the difference between cash flow and net income? I'll also be talking about budgets, projections, and forecasts. What are the difference? What exactly are they? Why are they important? And also business credit versus personal credit. Now, this is a pretty good one, because I always get people asking me the question, okay, my personal credit is pretty bad, but I would like to borrow money, or I'd like to purchase something. Can I use my business credit to do that rather than using my personal credit? And I always try to explain to them that there's a fine line between the two. And most people who are going to lend you money will either look at your business credit, normally take into consideration your personal credit, even if they look at your business credit. So I'll talk about that. Then also I'll be talking about tax planning and tax compliance. Okay, so let's start off with the type of legal structure that you select for your business. Now, the reason why this is important is because based upon the legal structure that you pick for your business, it's going to have an impact on how much you pay in taxes. So as a single member LLC or sole proprietor, you are taxed differently than if you were a corporation or if you were an S corp. Now, the questions people normally ask me is, well, under what entity do I tend to pay more money? And the answer is, it depends. Before you switch from being a single member LLC or from being a sole proprietor to, let's say, a corporation, whether it be an S corporation or a C corporation, you want to make sure that you are making the right decision, not only for tax purposes, but for there are other reasons why you will or should or should not switch between being an LLC and an S corporation. However, one of the components of making this decision is how you are taxed, and whether or not setting yourself up as an S corporation is going to save you money in the long run. And then sometimes it's not even about saving money. It's about you being an S corporation. Is the amount of money that you save as an S corporation worth all of the compliances that are required by the IRS and also by, well, mainly by the IRS and sometimes by the state? So that's one of the things that you would need to take into consideration when you're determining whether or not you, when you're picking a particular legal structure. Also, you want to take into consideration how much personal liability you face on your personal assets. So as a business owner, you want to make sure that whatever you do in your business does not affect your personal assets. So depending on the type of legal structure you choose, that's going to determine how much of your personal assets, if any, are at risk. For example, if you are a sole proprietor and you decided not to become an LLC, then that would mean that all of your personal assets are at risk. So if anyone should sue you within the business, they can come after your personal assets. Now, if you decide to become an LLC, then there is some protection there. Now, I always tell my clients that if you're looking for advice on how to protect your personal assets from your business, then you definitely want to contact an attorney, because an attorney is going to tell you exactly what you need to do, or at least he or she will let you know what your risks are depending upon your business structure, and also if there are other insurances that you need to purchase in order to protect your personal assets. So that's a very important aspect of making the determination as to whether or not you want to be either a sole proprietor, an LLC, an S corporation. And just keep in mind that there is usually more than one factor that you have to take into consideration when you're trying to determine the type of business structure that you want to be. It's not just one thing. Now, it could be that one thing may be the largest concern that you have, but it's always a mixed bag. It's never just one thing. Also, the type of legal structure that you select in your business is also going to determine your ability to raise capital for your business. So if you are a sole proprietor or you are a single member LLC, then you may not be able to raise capital for your business the same way that an S corporation or a regular corporation can raise capital. So, for example, an S corporation, they can invite shareholders to purchase shares in the business. So a person can say, okay, we love your business idea, so we are going to invest in your business. Okay, so you can have multiple shareholders invest in your business as an S corporation or as a C corporation. Whereas if you are a single member LLC or a sole proprietor, then that's not really an option. So, and also people who are investing in a business, usually a venture capitalist, sometimes they look at the type of business structure that you have created as part of their decision making as to whether or not they want to invest in your business. And also, one other item to take into consideration when you are trying to determine your legal structure is the amount of ongoing paperwork that your business has to do or abide by. Because as an S corporation, you are required by law to maintain your books. You have to have your financial statements, balance sheets, your profit and loss statements. And also, it's good practice to maintain a cash flow statement. Also, you may have to have shareholder meetings. And as a partnership, there's a whole set of rules and set of paperwork that you have to also abide by, some of which is the same as that of an S corporation. On the other hand, if you are a sole proprietor, well, you're not necessarily required by law to maintain these financials. However, it is good practice that you do so, because you always want to know where your money is going and where your money is coming from. And not only that, if you don't have financials, then how are you going to make intelligent decisions? So not having those financials, you're making decisions blind. However, based on your legal structure, you are either required to, or you are not necessarily required to, maintain paperwork. So that's a that's something that people take into consideration when they are picking a legal structure. So the second component of business financial literacy is setting up an accounting system. Well, every business begins and ends with financial accounting, which means when you start a business, you should have projections. So you don't just walk into a business and say, okay, or you don't just wake up one day and say, okay, I want to start a business. Before you start that business, there are certain things that you would do. You may want to do projections, whether it be financial projections. You may want to do budget projections. You may want to do forecast projections, or you may want to sit down with an accountant to figure out, okay, I'm about to start this venture. Okay, what do I need to start? Whether do I need money? Do I have to raise capital? If you have to raise capital, you may have to show financials to whoever you are trying to get capital from. So that's what I mean by every business usually begins with financials. And usually a business is going to end with financials if you anticipate, or if you decide that you want to sell your business. So let's say, for example, you have an S corporation, or even a sole proprietorship, and you want someone to maybe take over your salon. And if you're retiring and you're looking for someone to purchase your salon, okay, one of the things that they're going to ask for is your financial statements, because they want to see how your business is doing, how your business has been doing in the past. They're also going to want to look at your tax return, because I always say the truth of how a business is doing is always somewhere in the middle, somewhere in between the financial statement numbers and the tax return numbers. And the reason is because when it comes to the financials, people normally try to pad the financials to make it seem as if they're doing better than they are. Now, I shouldn't say people normally do that. What I will say is people have the ability to do that, and they may do that because they know that if the financials look good, it puts them in a better position to possibly borrow money or sell their business. So you have that component. And then you have the tax preparation, or rather the tax return component, where people try to minimize as much as possible how much they're making so that they don't have to pay all that much in taxes. So I always say, if you take the two, the truth is somewhere in the middle. Now, when I say your business ends with financial accounting, that's because you may have to show your tax return to the person who is interested in possibly purchasing your business. Okay. Now, in order for you to have your tax returns prepared, you have to have your financial statements. So you have to do the financials before you can do the tax return. So, and that's what I mean by every business begins and ends with financial accounting. So that's why it's important at the beginning to set up an accounting system. In addition to that, you cannot make any critical or viable decisions without the data from your accounting system. I always say that making decisions, or rather not having financials, is like driving a vehicle blind. eventually you're going to crash into something because you can't really see where you're going. You can't make a decision. Should I turn right? Should I turn left? Should I stay straight? Should I reverse? You don't know because you can't see. That's the same thing with not having financials. When you don't have financial statements, you cannot make critical and important decisions because you don't know what decision to make. There are no numbers in front of you telling you that, oh, you need to make this decision because of this, or based upon last month's projections, or rather last month's income, you may need to make a decision going this way based on the expenses. You may want to make the decision going this way, or based on the fact that you had a loss, you may want to change some things that you did, or because you may have had a wonderful month, you may want to continue or expand on what you did. You can't make those decisions if you don't have financials to refer to. So without the data an accounting system provides, you won't know the health of your business. Is my business healthy? Am I making money? You don't know the answer to that question unless you have financials, because your bank account is not necessarily telling you how well your business is doing. All your bank account is telling you is that this is how much money I have in the account. So let's say for a 3-month time period, you had a wonderful quarter and you made a lot of money. So then all that money after expenses, of course, went into your account. And then for the next quarter, you may have had losses for the last 3 or 4 months and you had no idea you had losses because you had no financial statements to look at. You were depending upon what was in your bank account, keeping in mind that the money that was in your bank account came from a prior quarter or prior months. So yeah, you have money to spend, which is really considered your cash flow. And we'll talk about that as one of the 6 components. But you may have cash flow, but then your company, your business may not be making any money. You may have had losses for the past 3 months and had no idea because you had money in the bank. So if you don't have those financials to tell you that, then you cannot course correct. So by the time you figure out that your business is not making as much money as you thought it was, or as much money as you'd like, or enough money to keep those bills paid, then it's going to be a problem when you finally find out, because the way you'll find out under those circumstances is all of a sudden you're not able to pay your bills and you're wondering, why am I struggling to pay my bills? And the reason is because you weren't making as much money in the prior months, and you didn't realize that because you had no accounting system that you were using to actually produce financial statements so you can make better decisions. Now, in addition to that, if you don't have financials, your accountant can't prepare your estimated or end-of-year taxes without the data from your accounting system. So in order for you to pay estimated taxes, which I know lots of people don't pay, but it is important that you do pay your estimated taxes. But in order for you to even be able to pay those estimated taxes, you have to have financial data, because that is where the projection of how much you are required to pay in estimated taxes is going to come from. In addition to that, how do you file your year-end tax return if you don't have any financials? If you don't see the numbers, if there are no financials, you don't know how much money you made. So what you wind up doing at the end of the year is you start scrambling, trying to put together your income and your expenses. And I can guarantee you, whenever that happens, you are definitely leaving money on the table, because it's very difficult to remember everything that you spent throughout the year. Not only that, a lot of people commingle their funds. So they have a personal account, or they have one account that they use for business and they use it for personal. So as you're going through your transactions, trying to figure out what was business, what wasn't, you're probably missing transactions that were actually business. So if you're not keeping up with this information on a regular basis, then more than likely at the end of the year, when it's time for your tax preparer to prepare your tax return, you're not going to get all of your deductions. Okay, so component number three, managing cash flow. And I briefly talked about that when I was talking about setting up an accounting system. So we have all heard the saying that cash is king, okay? So this old-time phrase, I always say, is extremely relevant if you run a small business. Because without sufficient cash flow, your business will most likely fail even if the business has consistent positive monthly net profits. Okay, this is what I was saying earlier. So there is a difference between cash flow and net profits. As we all know, revenue minus expenses equals net profit. Okay, now what is cash flow? So cash flow is changes in ending cash balance for a particular period. So let me give you a scenario so you can understand what I'm saying. So let's assume that you have a business, okay? And you've been in business for, let's say, 6 months. So the first 3 months of your business, you did wonderfully because everybody wanted to know about this new hair salon, and the buzz was, oh, wow, there's this new hair salon in town and they do all these fabulous styles. They have great stylists who can cut, they can color. They're just wonderful. So for the first 3 months, you had a slew of customers come in to get their hair done. So let's assume that you made, for that particular time period, you made, I'll just throw out a number. Let's say you made $50,000 for that 3 month time period. Okay, and then let's assume that your expense, and that $50,000 is net. After you've paid all of your expenses, you netted $50,000. Now, let's just say that the next 3 months, you had a tremendous slowdown. And not because your stylists weren't good anymore. Let's say something happened. Let's say that there was some kind of disaster where people had to either vacate or the town, or for some reason, people were losing their jobs. So let's just say for the next 3 months, there was some type of economic downturn and people were no longer able to afford to come to the salon on a regular basis. So month four, there's a serious slowdown. You don't make a lot of money. Same thing happens in month five. The same thing happens in month six. However, in months four, five, and six, you're still able to pay your expenses because you had $50,000 in the bank from the first 3 months that you did well. And also you had some money coming in for the last 3 months. So January, February, and March is where you made good money. So that was the $50,000 in your account. And then April, May, and June is when you had the downturn. So let's assume that for April, May, and June, you were making some money, but it wasn't a lot. And you had bills to pay. So you're still able to pay your bills because of the cash that you had in the bank that came from January, February, and March. The money you were making in April, May, and June was not enough to cover your bills. However, you didn't know that. You had no idea that that was the case. And the reason why you didn't know is because every time you wrote a check, it cleared and there was no problem. So you figured, well, things can't be that bad. I mean, you know that you're not making as much money because you can tell that the customers have slowed down. But for some reason, you're not thinking that it's affecting you financially because you are still able to pay all of your bills. So come month seven, you realize that you're struggling a little bit to pay your bills. And then that's when you start to pay attention and see that, oh, something isn't right. Now, if you don't have financials, then you're going off of assumptions that because I'm not busy, I'm not making any money, and therefore I'm unable to pay my bills, which of course is true. However, if you had financials in month four, that means in April, when you started to slow down, you would have realized that there is a problem, that you need to do something about this problem before it starts to affect your bottom line. So even though there is a downturn in your town, there are things that you could possibly do to get people to come in, whether it's offering some type of discount, whether it's bring a friend and you get your hair done for free, whatever type of promotion that you need to put out there in order for you to try to sustain financially. You would have known in month four that that is what you needed to do. But because you didn't, but because you are not managing your cash flow, you didn't know that. So by the time you realized that things were taking a downturn, it could either be too late, or it, you could be in a point of desperation where now you start assuming or thinking that you need to start offering your services for bottom basement prices just so you can keep your business running. So that's why it's important to manage your cash flow. Okay. If nothing else, even if you decide not to maintain an accounting system, which I think you should, have a spreadsheet where you can actually see what's coming in and what's going out. So you can determine your cash flow on a weekly, biweekly, monthly basis. So that way you can make decisions for your business if you start to realize that things are going south. And things don't necessarily have to be going south in order for you to make a decision. Things can be going wonderfully. And then now you know that, okay, whatever you're doing is working based upon your cash flow and what's coming in. Whatever you're doing is working, so you want to start to do more of it. You can't make this kind of decision if you don't have financials or if you're not managing your cash flow. And also keep this in mind, a business can survive with multiple periods of net losses, but they may not be able to survive with a single period of negative cash flow. So what this means is your business can actually keep running if you lose money for 6 months straight. However, if your cash flow drops to a negative balance, your business can take a huge hit, even if that happens in a 1 month time frame. Because without cash flow, you're not going to be able to sustain, you're not going to be able to pay your bills. So the third component, or rather the fourth component, is the difference between a forecast and a budget. Now, this is a question that I get quite a bit from clients. They want to know, well, what's a forecast and what's a budget? Well, a forecast and a budget are often used interchangeably. So sometimes a person may be talking about a budget. They may say forecast. Or what I find most of is people just assume everything is a budget. But there are distinct differences between the two. So a budget is an estimate of revenues and expenses over a specified period of time, okay? Now, a financial forecast, on the other hand, is a projection of future revenue and expenses that uses assumptions to predict future financial outcomes. So when you're doing a forecast, okay, what you are essentially doing is you're predicting how successful your business is going to be over time. Now, what is the purpose of a financial forecast? Usually, investors use financial forecasts to decide whether or not a project is a good investment for them. Not only that, you as a salon owner or as a hairstylist, you may decide that you want to implement a particular, I won't say a project. Let's assume that you say, okay, we're going to run this, let's say you want to add a new service to your business. So you want to make a projection. If we add this service, okay, how well do we think our business is going to do based upon this new service or this new product? So now you want to make projections. So you have to come up with different inputs to decide how much you think you are going to bring in from a new service or how much you think you're going to bring in from a new product. And not only that, let's assume that you are a hairstylist and you currently work at a commission salon, but now you've decided that you would like to purchase your own business. Well, you want to do a financial forecast to see how you think you're going to do. Now, as a former hairstylist, or rather as a hairstylist, you have a clientele base, okay? So even though you're making assumptions, you are making assumptions that are probably as accurate as they're going to be, because you're basing your assumptions off of what you are or what you are already doing and what you already have. Okay. So unlike an individual who decides that they want to open up a hair salon and they don't have a single client, or they could just be a business owner who is deciding, okay, I have extra money, I'd like to invest in something, I'm going to open up a salon, even though I'm not a hairstylist, which means that they're coming in with a blank slate and they don't really know how much money they're going to make. So if they decide to do a financial forecast, they would have to sit down and they'll have to make assumptions. So where will they get these assumptions from? They can ask around. They can ask other hairstylists. They can ask other salon owners. They can try to pull data from other businesses in the area to determine how much they think they're going to make. Okay. Now, when they're making these assumptions, they also have to look at their advertising budget. Because if you have an advertising budget that is pretty large, then your assumptions are probably going to be a lot more realistic, unlike an individual who may not have an advertising budget. If they're just basing their assumptions on, well, this is what I hope happens, well, then that forecast may not necessarily be a strong forecast. So basically, the key differences between a budget and a forecast is that a budget is a plan for where you want your business to go, while a forecast is an indication of where it is actually going. So with a budget, it's telling you, or you're telling it, this is what I expect to happen. That's your budget. Usually the budget just stays the same. While a forecast is an indication of where you think your business is actually going. And that's the reason why a forecast is something that investors look at, because this is where you think your business is going to go. And a budget is something that you, the business owner or the manager, looks at, because a budget is what you need to run your business for a period of time. So it's the amount of money that is needed to run your business for a specified period of time. Now, the fifth component is business credit versus personal credit. So what are some of the factors that lenders take into consideration when they're lending money? Okay, so some lenders rely solely and completely on you, the business owner's personal credit. So when you go try to borrow money from this particular lender, all they care about is, what is your credit score? What is your credit history? If we're going to loan you money, it's going to be based upon your credit background. Okay. Number two, you have some lenders that consider a blend of both. They'll look at your personal credit and they'll look at your business credit and they'll make a determination. So what exactly is business credit? Well, it's a few things. Okay. If you have, let's say you have vendors that you have payables with, they may look at that. They may see, okay, well, how often do you pay your vendors? Are you on time paying your vendors? That's one thing. And then also there is some kind of business credit score that some lenders can actually get a hold of. And I'm not really that versed on the different inputs that lenders use when they're trying to come up with a business credit, but there is a number. I know there is a number for your business credit score, and they look at that particular number. So that's something that I'm going to look a little bit deeper into to find out exactly what is it is that they're looking at to make that determination. Okay. But you have some lenders that will look at your personal credit and your business credit, and then they'll make the decision from there. And then you have some lenders that rely solely on your business's cash flow. Once again, that's why it would be important to have financial statements, because they're going to want to look at your financials and also look at your cash flow. So what does it mean when they rely solely on cash flow? Let's say, for example, you have a business and you've been in business for a certain number of months or years, because usually when they're looking at your cash flow, there is also always a criteria as to how long you have to have been in business. And also there's also a criteria on how much money you bring in every month. So what they're looking at is how much money are you bringing in every month? They have a criteria. It could be you must be bringing in 20,000, 30,000, 10,000, 5,000, whatever that number is. Different lenders have different limits. So usually they're looking at the gross, not the net. They're looking at the gross of what you're bringing in. And if you qualify based upon their requirements, which usually is the number of years you've been in business and what your cash flow, what's your monthly income is. If you qualify, then there's a possibility that you can get a loan. Now, usually with those types of loans, the interest rate is normally high. And the reason is because they're taking a chance on you. They're not taking into consideration your personal credit. So your personal credit could be really bad, or could be you may have a very low credit score. They're not taking that into consideration. They're just hoping that based upon your cash flow, that means the amount of money coming in every month, that they will likely get paid back on the loan. However, because they're not looking at your personal credit, usually the interest rate is going to be a little bit higher. And then you have some lenders that consider a blend of your cash flow, your personal credit, and your business credit. It just depends. So nowadays, there are so many different ways to borrow money. But keep in mind, the more conventional you go, the least interest you'll be paying. The more outside the box you go, the higher your interest rate is going to be. And this is because if you use a more traditional format to borrow money, they're going to use your personal credit score as part of their decision making, which means if your credit score says that you are a reliable human being who is more than likely going to pay them back, then you're going to get a lower interest rate. If you're going outside the box, which means they're not looking at certain things, then the risk is higher for the person loaning you the money, and therefore the interest that you pay is going to be higher. And of course, if you're somewhere in between, then you're going to have an interest rate that is in between high and low. So the sixth and final component of business financial literacy is tax planning and tax compliance. Okay, so what's the difference between tax planning and tax compliance? So tax planning is the analysis of your financial situation or your financial plan from a tax perspective. Okay, so it's a critical part of your financial plan if you want to reduce your tax liability and maximize your tax savings. So whenever you decide to do something in the financial realm, there's always usually a tax consequence that is attached to it. For example, let me just give you a really good example. I have clients sometimes that have retirement accounts. They may have a 401k account from a previous employer, or they may have been saving up money for retirement, and then they decide for whatever reason to withdraw that money. Okay, when they withdraw the money, maybe they want to buy a house. Maybe they just feel like withdrawing it. Maybe there is a good reason why they withdraw it. Maybe there is a reason that's not that great. They just see it sitting there and say, oh, money, let me go get some. Okay, so when you do that, the tax consequences can be really, really steep, because not only are you paying taxes on that money, also you will be paying a penalty for withdrawing it if that applies to you and your situation. And not only that, when you do that, you are increasing your tax rates. For example, let's assume you don't take money out of the bank, or rather, let's say you don't take money from your retirement account. And based upon the amount of money you made in a particular year, your tax rate is 15%. But then if you go pull money from your retirement account, that may increase your tax rate from 15% to maybe 25%. So now you're paying more additional tax on not only the money that you borrowed, and not, I'm sorry, on not only your retirement income that you pulled out, also you're paying more money on your earned income that you made during the year. So some people are not aware of this. And therefore, when they take out that money and at the end of the year, they see how much they owe in taxes, they are flabbergasted and they're saying, what in the world happened? And usually that's the case. So you want to plan for stuff like that. Also, if there's anything that you're doing in life, if you have to make a decision for your business, for personal, and there's money involved, if you're giving money away to someone, if you are receiving money from an individual, you want to plan for these types of things. If you're getting married, you want to make sure that you plan, because getting married definitely changes your tax situation. Also, if you decide to sell your home, if you've been in your home for a period of time, or maybe not, if you decide to sell your home, there is a tax consequence. So you want to find out what that will be for you. Also, if you decide, okay, I can't afford to pay my credit card bill anymore, so therefore I'm going to stop paying. And if you do decide to stop paying, and now the credit card company decides that they're going to send you a cancellation, a 1099C, which basically is a cancellation of debt, well, guess what? There is a tax consequence there. You're going to have to pay tax on that cancellation, and you weren't expecting that. If you had known that, then you may have made a different decision. So that's why I say tax planning is very important when it comes to your business financial literacy, because it can affect your business if you don't plan properly. And then, of course, there's tax compliance. So tax compliance is the degree to which you either comply with or fail to comply with tax laws and rules. And non-compliance, I always tell my clients all the time, can alter your company's legal status, whereby leaving you vulnerable to lawsuits. There are several consequences to non-compliance. So when I say it can alter your company's legal status. So if you don't comply with the laws and the rules of the IRS or of the state, and let me just give you an example with, say, an S corporation. As an S corporation, there are certain rules that you must comply with. If you don't comply with these rules, you may lose your legal protection. So what's the reason why some people want to become an S corporation, or rather an LLC or an S corporation? Usually it's because of some protection from your business. So you're protecting your personal assets from your business. If you don't comply with the requirements of being an LLC and being an S corporation, then you pretty much have null and voided that protection that you ordinarily would have had. Okay, so that's one example of a consequence of not complying with tax law. Of course, there are others as well. In addition to that, as an S corporation, you have to comply with the fact that you must set up payroll for you and for your workers. So if you are an S corporation, you have to have payroll. Even you, as the sole owner of the S corporation, you too must be on payroll. Okay, that's a requirement. If you don't comply with that, then there are consequences for not doing so. The consequences are some serious penalties and, of course, interest. And I've seen where penalties and interest sometimes exceed what the actual tax was. In addition to that, if you are an S corporation and you have employees, you are required to withhold taxes from them and submit those taxes to the state and to the IRS. If you don't do that, then there is a serious consequence for not doing that. And usually when it comes to withholding taxes, which is also called trust fund, the IRS and state do not play. And it's called trust fund because the money that you collect from your employees to turn over to the IRS and the state has been entrusted to you. So that money is not your money. The money it belongs to your employees. So they are trusting you to take the money and withhold it from their paychecks, and in turn, turn it over to the IRS and to the state. If you don't do that, you are out of compliance, and there are some serious consequences as it relates to what the IRS and the state will do penalty-wise. Usually those penalties are 100%. I mean, they don't play around with that, because when that happens, the assumption is, oh, you just stole from your employees. That's how they look at that. So that's the reason why they take non-compliance of remitting payroll withholdings very, very seriously. So the basic difference between tax planning and tax compliance, once again, tax planning is the analysis of your financial situation or your financial plan from a tax perspective. Okay, so you're making decisions from a tax perspective, whereas the compliance is the degree to which you either comply with or fail to comply with tax laws and rules of the IRS and the state. Well, once again, guys, I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to listen to my show. And this is likely going to be the last show of the year. I may do one more, but I'm not yet sure. But I'd like to thank you guys for listening to my show. And before I go, I just want to let you know that on December 10th, I'm going to be doing a live webinar, QuickBooks Self-Employed for the booth renter and the salon suite owner, as well as the very small salon owner. So in that webinar, I'm going to be talking about the benefits of QuickBooks Self-Employed and why and how you as a salon professional can use QuickBooks Self-Employed for your business. And as you all know, tax season is around the corner. So you want to start 2019 out correctly. So this is going to be a really great webinar. And I'm going to talk about all of the benefits of using QuickBooks Self-Employed and how it can help you stay organized and how it can help you provide a financial roadmap to your business. And that's what you want. You want to be able to look at your business from on paper to see exactly where you came from, exactly where you are, and exactly where you want to go. And once again, thank you and have a great day.